succession number 23447, reel 11.
Mr. Waller, reel 11. Now, we're talking about when you got to Brandon, which is near Thetford, isn't it?
Yes, right.
You got there in January, I presume.
Yes.
1944.
Yeah, beginning of Jan.
And you were saying it was a newly built camp.
Well, I don't know whether it was newly built, but there were Nissen huts there. But it was must have been hastily assembled, because what happened... Now, the reason I say that is that this character I was telling you about earlier, this man Friday, this chap with the two stretches in Pentonville, he'd been wounded in Italy and therefore was sent on the advance party. And he went down as one of the people to prepare the camp. Now, what they had was a number of the standard type beds, army beds, metal, you know, it slid in, you pulled up half of it out and it slid back in. And you also had the wooden ones, with like bunk beds. There were four wooden posts and the wire in between netting. Well, nobody had had time to take an inventory of it, because this villain loaded all the metal beds on 2-3 tonners and took them up to the east end of London and flogged them to a scrap metal merchant, then flogged the 2-3 tonners and was missing for 6 weeks, so that when we got there weren't enough beds. And eventually we got there, and there was even the ones that we had, they were breaking up chairs, anything to put in the stoves, you know, to try and keep warm, because it was the beginning of January, it was snowing and we were freezing. And any bit of furniture, don't matter what it was, everything got broken up and shoved in, because we had a limited amount of coke to keep warm. And so it wasn't a happy homecoming, but at least we were home. But we were there only a short time.
Two things. I've got your memorabilia in front of me. Mm. One is that you were back to rifleman when you got back to England. How did that happen?
Yes. a misdemeanor.
When did that occur?
In Italy.
What had you done?
Once again, I'd gone missing.
In what way?
Absent without leave, shall we say. I'd gone off on a recce to see what was available to be liberated, and I shouldn't have done that.
When was that? At Sorrento?
No, before that. It was one town we came across, and we went in there, and the Italian was very cunning. There was a shoe factory there. And what he did, he got his entire stock and threw it out into the square in the middle, all out of the boxes, so that, you know, there were most probably 20,000 pairs of shoes, but they were all in one big pile, and to try and match up the colour and the size and the style was impossible, so it was safe. But we used to go off seeing what we could find, and I was sort of
looting.
No, liberating. Only the bad guys looted. The good guys liberated. So they, see what was about. You did trading, you know. You sort of swapped army stores for a chicken or whatever, you know. And I'd gone off, and a caller comes through, and the column moved away, and of course I was missing. And they took a poor view of that.
So you were derated right back to rifleman.
Yes.
And the other thing is, you seem to have got in touch with your old girlfriend, Laurie.
Yes.
Quite a romantic exchange of cards.
Yes, you see.
Well, what about that? I mean, were you able to keep relationships going across that amount of time?
Well, yeah, I mean, I got engaged. I'd met her when I was still a civilian. And I was out with my cousin and a friend of mine whose stepbrother was in the Navy. And the four of us were out in London, walking along. You know, sort of the, every town's got the monkey parade, you know, where you go out looking for talent. And we were walking along, and there were these two girls, and one came up to touch the soldier's sailor's collar for luck. I didn't know this custom, but it was, because her father was a regular man in the Navy in the First World War and the Russian convoys. So, and I got chatting to her and sort of, can I see you sort of thing. And I didn't realise at the time, she said she was 16, and the next day I got a letter saying, well, I'm not quite, I'm still only 15, you see. And, but anyway, I sort of got with her. And then before I went into the army.
We mentioned you got engaged to her.
Got engaged before I went in the army, yeah. Her father was still alive then, and
was it difficult sort of getting back in touch with her? I mean, you sent her a card, didn't you?
Yeah.
And she sent you a telegram back. You just, you know, was it difficult to sort of keep things? I mean, you've been away for 2 years.
Yeah, oh, we wrote to each other regularly, you know, all the time. But unfortunately, she didn't save those letters because we weren't married. But after we got married, I've still got all the letters that I sent to her. She saved them all during the time in England and when we went to, you know, over to D-Day and onwards. She saved all the letters, you see. And,
so what happened when you met her again?
Ah.
When was that? On your disembarkation leave?
Yeah. See, I got home and I think it might say there, you know, we hope to be home. But don't wait. And she, by that time, she joined the Wrens. She was in the Wrens. And I think they came one day and we didn't turn up. And it was the next day and they waited for hours. And we got off the train. I think it was it Liverpool Street? Liverpool Street, something like that. Fenchurch Street, I can't really remember. Wherever the line runs to from Brandon, it's either Liverpool Street or Fenchurch Street, I think. And we turned in, and she was sitting on a thing with, and her mother was standing beside her, and they were waiting, you know, sort of suddenly a wild scream, and she rushed up and threw her arms around my neck, sort of business, you know.
So she hadn't gone off you?
Oh, no, no, no.
Did it worry you when you were away, you know, with all the temptations of life, leaving your girlfriend behind like that, or
no,
did you trust her, decide to
do it? No, I don't know whether because I was young and innocent or what, but I didn't think of it. Things weren't quite the same. I know they always, you know, the Americans, they think, you know, over here, overpaid, oversex, but I don't think, you know, the way of life wasn't the same as it is today. It was, you know, partners or girlfriends seemed to remain fairly true. I mean, it was obviously a percentage that did things, but yeah, I felt confident she wasn't that type, and as far as I know, she wasn't.
And you got married on the 19th of January?
Yeah.
44?
Yeah.
And, I mean, did you get extra leave for getting married? Or
No, during my disembarkation leave. I got a special licence. You could get a special licence 48 hours, you see. You didn't have to read the bans or anything like that. And unbeknown to us, as you can see in the photograph, we didn't know. We just had the wedding. I sent for my pal Arthur Cox, who'd been with us, got no reply. The reason being, when he got home, he went out on a 3-day binge and hadn't sobered up. But turned up in time for when we got back from the church, you know, in a loud bookmaker's suit, and she was bleary-eyed. But the Wrens, we didn't know. I mean, they must have cooked it up, and it was after I'm sitting in the church, and suddenly there was a rustle, and about 30 Wrens turned up with the officer, you know. It was a complete surprise. But my pal Bill Ash was there, and the my wife, Laurie, her brother, who was in the RAF, he was there. And eventually I got my cousin, he got a 24-hour leave, and he came up for best man. But it was all very much of a rush, and it was... I'd have to check what day it was. It was either the Tuesday or Wednesday we got married, and then we had, in between then, to scrounge some coupons, you know, to buy some stuff to get a little do going on the Saturday, and had it at her mother's house, you know, on the Saturday. So,
Now, what was going on at when you were, you know, when you went back to Brandon? What were you doing at Brandon? You were there until May.
Yeah.
When you moved to your concentration area, but yep. What were you actually doing?
Well, I when we got back there, there was an awful lot to do. What they were doing, everybody was going on this on vacation leave, of course, and you know. They had to get that out of the way. I think it was three weeks we got, week three each year. Well, when we got back, you know, they were trying to get everything sorted out with records and other things. They were issuing out your inch and a half Africa Star medal ribbon, your desert rat. The original one was a car key thing that had been made by the local wogs in Cairo, you see, but we got the official one, you know, the red one, black, red on the black background. They were being dished out. And there was all sorts of things to do. And they came to me and they said, you've got a office background. I said, yeah, I work in the city. Why? They said, well, would you mind helping out in the company office to catch up on this stuff? So my time... at Brandon, I ducked out on the train a lot of it, because I was helping out in the company office.
Was that B Company?
B Company, yeah. And
what sort of duties were you doing in B Company office?
Well, it was you were doing leave passes, ration cards for the office, and clothing coupons for the officers. You know, it was an ongoing thing. And
now, you were a fairly old soldier by then, in some ways. Were you aware of any of the old fiddles that could be done in the office on leave passes and things like that? Or did you do any of them?
Yeah. I mean,
can you tell us about it? Because people don't know now, do they?
No. Yeah, I mean, you knew that, you know, you could get the odd leave pass out of the book and do away with the counterfoil, and you did favours for one or two of your friends by giving them a leave pass and things like that. And, of course, that meant ration cards as well. I mean, they were all numbered, but it was a very loose thing. I mean, they were numbered consecutively, but there was no... Once they'd been issued, there was no real check on it. I mean, it was a bit haphazard, the whole thing, you see. It was...
was this for personal profit or more?
Doing a favour, you know. I mean, you didn't, no question of selling them or anything like that. And it was, you know, if you could do somebody a favour, you know, your old pals, you know, don't remember, you know, when we were in Cairo or Naples, I did you a good turn and all that type of thing, and you helped out there, but. Then they started on training with exercises, and fortunately I went down with a malaria relapse and was put into hospital.
That was a real malaria?
Real malaria. I was in a hospital nearby. I don't know where it was. I think it was a Canadian, run by the Canadians. And I can remember laying there and I listened, there was a dance going on, it must have been a Saturday night, and I could hear this, something about Dozy Dote and Mersey Dote. I thought, what the hell going on in this country? And it took me years to find out what the words were for that, but they were singing this song, you know, and Little Lambs Eat Ivy, you know, and I was in there, and I was in there, I don't know, a week to 10 days, and I came out, and reported back to the company, and they were all loading up. They were going off for an exercise somewhere. And the company commander said, you look like death warmed up. He said, he stopped back in the camp. He said, you do a bit in the company office if they want you, he said, but just take it easy. I said, right. So off went the company. Half hour later, I got my small pack, got out on the road and thunder lift, because my wife was then stationed at Lowestoft in the men. I thunder lift and I was off to Lowestoft. And I managed to get booked in at the Salvation Army. Went up to the Rennery, which was had been a convent where my wife was stationed. I mean, she didn't know I was coming. I mean, I just got out and turned up there, and a young sailor was on guard with a rifle and bayonet. And I said, will you take a message in Rem Waller? I want to see her. And she said, I can't do that. I said, look, I've just come back from being abroad, and we got married, and I've got leave, and I want to see her. Oh, I heard that story before, and I said, look, Sonny, you either go and tell her, or I'll take that rifle and bane it off you and stick it where it hurts. So he could see I wasn't too pleased, and he eventually got her, and she came out, and we sort of was able to get off duty, do a swap, and we got a few days together, and then the only thing is, in Lowestoft, they've got where the river comes in, they've got a bridge which swings, like the Newcastle Swing Bridge, you know. And I'm walking along, sort of, from the Salvation Army, because they turn you out at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm walking along, and the bridge is open, and I stand there, and I heard a, and I look around, and there's about 10 red caps on motorbikes and trucks, and morning lads, and they must have looked and spotted the old Desert Rat sign and the African Star, you know, because we got the ribbon by then, and they just didn't say anything, so I got away with it, you know. But they were the sort of things I used to do, why I used to go up and down on rank. So
were you just back as a gun loader now?
I mean, I'd been helping in the office, and then I'd gone into the hospital. So, I came back.
Yeah, that's what you'd have been. So, what happened when you got back from Lowestoft? Did they spot you popped off?
No, I got back, no problem. I knew we're never coming back, got away with it. And I think I did two trips, you know, to there, you know, managed to get a short weekend one in, you know, you sort of get somebody a cover for you. That's where, you know, you come for me and there might be a leave pass in it for you. That was the, well, it was done on that basis rather than trying to make a fortune. And life passed at Brandon, and we were taken, strangely enough, up to the Wash, Lowestoft and round by the Wash. And that's where we would do it, because we used to be able to fire the anti-tank guns out to sea.
Still the six-pounders?
Yeah.
And was there anything new in the exercise? You know, when you did go on an exercise, sounds like you did there on firing. Was there anything new, you know?
No. Well, I mean, the big exercise I'd missed, the one that went on for a week or 10 days, I missed that. But no, we just, at the firing was just a, sort of because of the reinforcements you got in, you had new people, and you were giving them, they hadn't fired a gun in anger, so you were giving them practice of firing the guns. And
do you notice any differences between, I mean, you've got desert methods.
Yeah.
You'd learn how to drop off the portee quickly. Yeah. I don't know whether there were any shortcuts involved. There certainly were with the 25-pounders.
Mm.
Were there a difference between the desert methods and how they expected you to do when you were back in sort of peacetime conditions in England?
No, because we no longer were using portees.
You were always on the truck, were you?
Pardon?
You were using the trucks, were you?
No, we got half tracks.
Which half tracks? Do you know what's up?
I don't know. The original ones with wheels were called white scout cars, weren't they? And then they were American made half tracks.
Were they better or worse than the portees?
Oh, well, they were better, because for one thing, you know, it would stop small arms fire. You had steel round you, and you had a gun on tow. I presume that they thought that when you got to the continent, you would be using roads. I mean, some country, but you would be using roads, and therefore, it was all right to tow the guns.
The wheels would stand up to the road.
Yeah, and they would stand up to a certain amount of country, but you know, they weren't anticipating the sort of 100 mile, 200 miles we had in the desert, you know, and so we switched over. We got issue with half tracks, half tracks in, and I say, really, the one thing we noticed, we were getting lads of about, 18 and a half, and by then, I was 24, or was coming up, I was in the May, I was 24, in May, 44, and I looked at them, and I thought, yeah, whoever took them away from their mother, I felt like Methuselah, and most of us did, you know, so, God, where they got these little babies from, you know, they... After 2.5-3 years in, shall we say, action, at the sharp end and that, you grew up very quick. And by the time we got to 24, we were old men, you know, old stagers. And these lads of 18 and a half, you know, baby face, you know.
Did you mix well with them? I mean, I know you looked...
We got on all right with them. And they were cheeky little sods, you know. He says, oh, you only had one battle. That was Alamein. I mean, they hadn't got a clue. They didn't know. We said, look, you'll soon learn, son, that if you get on a night patrol with six of you, that can be more dangerous than the Battle of Alamein, you know. He said, but you'll learn that in due course, you know. But they used to, you know, obviously some of our chaps used to swing tell them tales, you know, and kid them along, but... They did the same, because I can remember my wife saying that she and her friend had gone down into Lowestoft for called it a coffee house to get some coffee, and there were these young lads there, and she said, "Oh, you know, got their desert rats up." And she said, "I see your seventh." "Oh yes, we were there and shooting the lion, you know." And she said, "Oh well, I'm sure you know my husband and his friends, you know." And so, "Who's that?" You know, suddenly they went quiet and greatly excused themselves, you know. But they used to try it on, you know, crack on with the girls. And
now, anything else happened at Brandon?
No. One thing, when we went on leave, incidentally, one of the leaves from Brandon, we got an ordinary privilege leave. Apart, we got the disembarkation and the privilege leave, and there were, it was either three, I'm sure it was three or four of us, decided they had a play on at one of the West End theatres called the Desert Rats. So we said, right. So we all took our wives' girlfriend, and we'd go the whole hog, and we booked a box. And I can remember this thing, I wish I'd kept the programme. And they, where they dig a slit trench, they had a pickaxe and they broke the floorboards in on the stage, you know, and got down, and we were all sitting, and when some of the things that they were doing and coming out with, we were sort of like, what a load of rubbish, and sitting in the front row, we're all ranging, you know, from lieutenant colonels and brigadiers, and they looked up and there's three Bakshi riflemen or corporals, whatever, and we were at the time, and it was quite fun, you know. We've got a box, you lot haven't.
Did you enjoy the play? I mean,
yeah, it was quite fun, I forget. You know, sort of. I was saying, I wish I'd have kept for the souvenirs.
It was called the Desert Rats.
Yeah, it was called the Desert Rats, you know. I really thought one of these days I must check out if there's any programme still in the archive somewhere. Our life at Brandon, you know, went on, and we just used to go out and practice the on landing craft. Some of them, we did a bit of practice on landing craft.
Well, tell me about that, because that's the first time you've done that.
Oh, yeah.
What about landing craft training? Tell me about it.
Well, it was more for the infantry ones. But you see, we were intending to go with our half tracks. So
on the LCT again.
On the LCTs, yeah. So, you know, we did a couple of runs on an LCT and coming ashore and driving off. So
I mean, one of the things is getting everything on board the LCT. It's not always easy. Did you have any practice in that?
No. I mean, all we did was make sure we had the stuff that we were supposed to and drive on and drive off, really. That's all it. As far as we were concerned individually, whose problem it was packing the stuff on, you know, getting the vehicles on, wasn't our worry. We just went where we were told.
Anything else at Brandon? No. Because you were there till May.
Yep. And then we were moved up to Brentwood in Essex.
Now that'd be Worley Barracks.
That's it. Yeah, we were in the grounds, actually, not in the barracks. We were under canvas.
And what was it like in the tents?
It was all right. It was quite a good summer. We used to spend our time going into Brentwood, you know, going to the cinema or trying to get going to the pub. I also had an uncle and aunt that lived few stations up the line. I went up to visit them, and it was we weren't doing anything, you know, we weren't doing any training. We were just sort of sitting around and, you know, you called you out on parade and things like that, but and take care of your equipment, gun and rifle and all that, but there was no sort of exercise or training or anything like that. We were just spending our time quietly in under the tents, you know.
The one thing was the security, the secrecy and security that came in. It wasn't there when you arrived, but it was brought in May, was it?
Yeah.
What do you remember about that? Because it seems to cause your missus a bit of annoyance.
Well, what it was, we didn't know when the day was going to be, but it must have been to them, because what was happening, they held up the mail. We weren't getting any mail, and nor was she. And this was sort of, I don't know, week, 10 days before we took off to go to France. Because one morning we woke up and we thought, we're going to town. And when we got there, there were aprons of barbed wire ringing the whole camp. They virtually sealed the camp off overnight. Just put these, you know, aprons of barbed wire, you know, two of them, another one on top. And that was it. We were just stuck in the camp, and that was when, as I say, there was a hold up in the mail. She wasn't getting any from me. We were getting some from her, but you know, she wasn't likely to blow any secret about it, you know, whereas somebody in the camp, I mean, although they censored mail, you could get stuff through and things like that. You know, you might say, so-and-so's happened, and it might be enough to give an inkling that something was coming off. So they just sort of stopped delivering mail. And
did you have any briefing or final training sessions?
No.
Did they tell you, briefing, they surely must have briefed.
No, but while we were there, Montgomery did came down and got up and he said, this is like a game of cricket. You don't put your best batsman in first and you don't put him in last, you put him in the middle. And to this day, I'm still trying to work out how D1 was the middle.
What did you think of Montgomery? I mean, I don't know whether you'd seen him speak before, but...
I was impressed from Alan Halfa, when he first took over in the desert, and we got a printed leaflet sent round saying, you know, we are going to stand here and we're going to... And it's the first time anybody had actually ever given us it. We really didn't know what the hell was going on. We were just used to... So move over there, tanks coming, all that. And this has been going on all the time. It's the first time anybody sort of actually said, it sounds like somebody knows what they're doing at long last. And so, you know, we always had a good...